learn, grow, live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And good evening, good morning, good day, no matter where you're at, for what is it, October 15th, 2014. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly, and you're listening to Metaphysical Universe. I'm here, of course, with Dr. Vicki Hunter. Hey, Vicki.
Good evening. Looking forward to tonight's show, as always.
And in tonight's show, we've got two segments. We'll get to that in just a second. Let me give you the rundown on the show. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the International Society of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly radio program, we also operate two schools, the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, which offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysics. More information is at metaphysicsinstitute.org. And also ICHS, the International College of Humanistic Science, where you can take standalone courses, certificate courses, and even certification programs there at ICHSworld.org. To continue on, we want to do our profession of beliefs. And if you've listened to us before and you get to this part and you think, oh, the belief thing again, they're really important. And so each week, if you're listening to this program, whether live or on the archives, take note of at least one of these nine principles of belief and see how you can apply it in your life. Because in my opinion, this is the healthiest spiritual philosophy on the planet. The spiritual philosophy of the International Society of Metaphysical Humanism is based upon nine principles of belief. They are, number one, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle of do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Number two, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. We invoke and exert the counselor and guru within. Number three, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. Number four, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are therefore equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number five, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number six, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both a physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Number seven, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these three synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. Number eight, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. Number nine, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. For more information on these principles of belief, as well as the International Society of Metaphysical Humanism, please visit metaphysicalhumanism.org. So we'd like to welcome those who are listening to this live program, those who are joining us in the chat room, as well as those who are listening to the archive of this program. What we started doing last week is separating the shows into kind of a couple of segments. We're going to do a segment on the spiritual side of things. And then we're going to do a second segment or second part of the show on something that has to do with the science thing, part of it. So we'll do something on personal improvement for the first section or segment. And then the second one, we'll do something that, you know, on consciousness or science or paranormal or something like that. So tonight, the first segment, we're going to talk more about doing no harm and doing right. What exactly does that mean? Where do you draw the line? The second segment, we're going to bring Dr. Brian Parsons on. He's the executive director of Paranexus. And we're going to discuss, well, avoiding undue paranormal speculation. And we'll get into that in a moment. Of course, we are the phone lines will be open if you want to call in. Michael Kelly is with us. Hey, Michael.
Hey, everybody. As always, I'm very glad to be here. Had a little bit of technical difficulties logging on. But as I'm putting in chat right now, we always welcome any questions or comments that you have. So you can give us a call at 714-459-3973. All right.
All right. Thanks, bud. Okay. So, well, how about next week? Just kidding.
All right. Michael's so good.
I know.
We're just so lucky to have him.
Well, he's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
But not really, sort of, though. All right. Let's talk about defining doing do no harm and do right. One of the things that I want to stress through this further discussion of these two principles, which we've discussed at length in the past, but I want to kind of put a new spin on it, so to speak. I want to discuss how these two principles are not a basis for fanaticism. Fanaticism is not good in anything. And so if we were to take these two principles, do no harm and do right, to the absolute strictest sense possible, I mean, we wouldn't even be living because, you know, at some point breathing is going to be doing harm to somebody, you know, in some environment, some atmosphere, somewhere. So we want to, as with everything, we want balance, groundedness, reasonableness with things. If we were to take do no harm, I mean, obviously we think about do no harm as do no harm to others, but it also applies to us. If we have a habit of allowing our boundaries to be violated, well, you know, we're really harming ourselves with that. And there are a zillion things we can do to harm ourselves and to harm others. But I want to just make sure that we keep this within reason. For example, if we wanted to get fanatical about it, we could say that people who eat too much, who are overweight, people who smoke, all that are, you know, doing themselves harm, and they're violating this principle, one of the nine principles of belief. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that everybody has their own life, their own path, their own journey, and they have the right to make decisions for themselves. And again, I'm really talking about this in the area of bringing harm to oneself. So we have to allow people to be who they are, to walk their own path, to learn their own lessons, to cross those mile markers of higher awareness, and we're all on that. You know, we all become more aware every day, and sometimes we have epiphanies and we really become aware, but we have to take all of this in balance.
You know, I think that our responsibility is always to be educated and then make the best decisions for ourselves with what we have at that time. And making conscious decisions, you know, I mean, a lot of people eat ice cream every day and say, well, I know it's not good for me and I gain a pound a day, you know, but who cares? Somebody wants to eat ice cream every day, what do I care, you know?
Yeah.
So the do no harm is really, I think, in our consciousness, and I see it more as about cleaning up our psyches and starting to see the harmful things that we do to each other and how we treat each other, and our regard for humanity, our regard for our neighbors, our regard for our families, and how inconsistent we often are. And we have to grow that consistency, grow the awareness.
Good points. So, You know, I suppose I thought I could, you know, fill up a whole lot of time with this one thing, but I don't know that a whole lot needs to be said. We need to avoid judgment, being judgmental of others who are doing their thing, and especially if it's regard to themselves. I mean, everybody has the right to do what they want with their body. Now, when it comes to doing harm to others, well, that's different. And I guess I could expand on that a little bit too, because while we're still not fanatics, we don't want to condone or do harm to others. We want to do the right thing. We are not passive. You know, metaphysical humanism is not passive, but it does respect other people's rights. It doesn't give unsolicited advice. It gives guidance for those who want it, but it's never forced. We're not passive. We will stand firm on principles, but when it comes to preferences, we're going to yield because it's not worth the battle. It's not worth the fight.
I think all the principles work together. And, you know, the do no harm, do right. Some people think that's do no harm, do good, you know, to do good things. Well, I think it's more about the right thing. I confess, I am not, I'd like to be, but I'm not of the Gandhi psyche where it's passivity and peace at all cost. Because, look, if somebody broke into my house and was about to harm my family, I am not going to say, excuse me, can we talk about it?
Right.
It's the right thing kicks in, our, you know, our biology kicks in, our, you know, that other side kicks in to do the right thing to protect your, you know, yourself, your family, and it is the right thing. Now, the doing no harm, well, it's not that I want to harm anybody. I'm not looking for trouble here. You're looking for trouble, and I have to protect my kids. So I do know what I'm capable of, and it's not an easy thing to admit, but it is also the one thing that I must own, that I have to own that side of myself, that the right thing in that moment is to not let anyone harm my children, and the right thing is to protect them, so whatever that takes.
And that's an excellent example, too, of when we talk about do no harm. Well, if somebody's breaking in and, you know, they intend to do harm or just intend to do harm, period, you can defend yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. You have to. You have an obligation to, you know, and your family too. So, again, the main point here is no fanaticism. Don't be judgmental of other people doing what they, you know, are doing. Because don't ever forget, we're all doing the best we can with the knowledge, experience, resources we have at the moment, and the awareness that we have at the moment. And that changes daily. And if we don't want people pointing a finger at us, we don't want to point the finger at them. Let them live their lives. You live your life. Now, if somebody's doing harm to others, harming other people physically or whatever, of course, there are times when you've got to step in and do something. There's such a thing called mandated reporting, especially for clergy people and for counselors and therapists, so forth. If a child, a minor, or an elderly person is being abused, they have a legal obligation to report that, not to mention the moral obligation. Now, there's some religions, such as Jehovah's Witnesses, that will not, they basically, you know, hold for ecclesiastical privilege, and they will try to handle pedophiles and people who are accused of molesting children. They'll try to handle that inside the congregation, inside the organization. Unfortunately, that is immoral and it is wrong. People, they're not equipped, and most religions are not equipped to handle those kind of people, because pedophiles are not going to change. So when we may have to step in, we may have to do the right thing for somebody who's being a victim, but we also want to keep things within reason, balance. We want to keep good judgment, good head on our shoulders, not resort to being a fanatic on anything.
Michael is saying in the chat, I might even say that the good thing isn't always the nice thing. That's a really good point. You know, because I'm doing the right thing to stand up for, let's say, myself or someone else, and somebody says, "Well, what, can't you just be nice about it?" Well, I don't know. How do you be nice about something? Sometimes there is no nice way. You know, I mean, my grandmother always said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Mm-hmm. I totally disagree with that.
Absolutely. Well, you sometimes things need to be said very directly. But if we remember the short test on assertiveness, you know, it's got to be honest, direct, empathetic, and win-win. So when we're saying something, even if we've got to correct somebody or whatever, remember that. Be direct, honest, empathetic, and seek win-win. So if you're trying to correct somebody and you tell them, you know, you need to stop being such a stupid moron and do it right, well, that's not exactly, empathetic. It's not win-win.
Yeah, I guess they should stop that, hey?
Might be direct and honest, but it's not empathetic and win-win. So,
oops.
Yeah, so, you know, we can always choose our words. We can be diplomatic about it, gracious. You know, a lot of times people make mistakes and they're not even aware of it. They're not aware. And that's the big thing I keep talking about every show. People are at different varying levels of awareness. When we learn a lesson, we grow in awareness. We realize, oh, shouldn't do that. So we learn, we change. Our awareness has risen. And that's all this show is about, is trying to stimulate heightened awareness. That's what we're trying to do in the world, is to help raise awareness. It's stated different ways. Another way is to raise the vibrational level of humanity. That's simply, we want to raise awareness. We want to help people to realize that we're not islands. We're not alone. We're all together. We're connected. We need to find our solutions, and we need to be tolerant and non-judgmental of one another, provided, you know, that nobody's doing any harm here. So,
well, my favorite adage for myself, and I share this with my clients, is before I open my mouth, I ask myself, what do I hope to achieve by this?
Mm-hmm.
What do I hope to achieve by saying this, doing this? What do I hope to accomplish? That's a really good question to check in with myself if I feel like I want to affect change because I like control, you know, or am I feeling a little helpless or, you know, a little irritated, you know, and do I really just want to say, oh, you're a stupid moron? You know, but it's, you know, we have to check in with ourselves and I think with some critical thinking, and that's just my favorite thing to do. What do I hope to achieve by this? And really, if it's none of my, then it helps me give that second to ask, what's my business?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because some things are just none of my business.
Yeah, and that's what we have to remember, not give unsolicited advice, not go into somebody else's business when it's not our business. So, you know, another aspect of do no harm involves the paranormal. And, you know, for ever since about the get-go, Paranexus has had that as a motto, do no harm. And there's a lot of ways that that can be applied in the paranormal world. Now, if you have a thought and you'd like to share it and you'd like to call in, if you're listening to this program live, you're more than welcome to do it. Michael will take your call and put you in the queue. If you have comments, you can certainly write them in the chat room as well. We're going to talk about avoiding paranormal speculation. And to help out, we have Dr. Brian Parsons with us, the executive director of Paranexus and a long, long, long time paranormal researcher. Brian, welcome again. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dr. Doug and Dr. Hunter.
Hey, I'm so glad to see you again. Well, talk to you again, Brian. Good
doctor,
to have you here, really.
Something like that, yeah.
Doctor.
Didn't we do this last time?
Yeah, I think we did. And it always reminds me of, what was it, Fletch or something? Anyway, Brian, thanks for being with us. I know we've talked about this in the past, and I got an email, yesterday I think it was, and every now and then I get these things that just remind me of how many people in the paranormal field, especially in the amateur part of it, the ghost hunting field, which, you know, people who've listened to me know I have no love for that aspect of it. But there's so much speculation that goes on. Got an email about trying to get people together to I'm trying to be diplomatic about it now.
Say it.
I just
go
got
ahead.
Done
Say
talking
it.
About it.
Say it.
I can't violate it so early, can I? Basically, trying to have group mass prayers to basically help free the cemeteries of the enslaved or imprisoned or, you know, souls that are hanging back. And, you know, I I read that stuff, and look, and I'll tell you one thing, I can't cite them for their intent, and I can't cite a lot of folks for their intent. Their intent is not bad, it's good, if they're trying to help. But this comes back to where the awareness, the education is so crucial, and what so many in the paranormal world don't realize is that when they go speculating about things without a compelling basis to support it, they've lost their credibility. Brian, I'm going to shut up and let you chime in.
Well, I think the term that they were trying to use is called mass soul rescue, and it's a concept of trying to help troubled spirits or souls to cross over. Which, again, yeah, it's a noble effort, but when your beliefs start to filter out into the general public and try to construe that as a fact, and that everyone has to get on board with this, and you know, it's almost like passing out Kool-Aid.
Yeah,
and it's
it's because it's so
Jim
prevalent.
Jones, yeah,
yeah, you know, he didn't say anything on the first part of the show, so he can. No, just kidding. So, you know, this is the thing. I mean, there's so many examples of it. I hear it so. I can't even watch any of these ghost hunter reality shows anymore. It just kills me every time. There's so much speculation about, well, for example, shadow people, you know, do they exist? I don't know. People say they do. I've heard, I guess, some compelling cases, but you know, the thing that really gets to me, and this is going to strike probably a chord or a hot button with a lot of paranormal researchers out there, is the whole demonic thing. Folks, you know, if you're going to be an anomalous researcher, then you need to be objective. You don't go into it with preconceived notions. And I don't want to burst, yes, I do want to burst your bubble. Demons don't exist. I mean, just today I was watching some documentary where they got an EVP that says, praise Satan. Well, you know, I don't know where that came from. There's a lot of other ideas, hypotheses we could explore if we had time on where some of these EVPs come from. But the point is that you have to believe in Christianity to believe in demons or some other religion that has demons. You know, in all my years, I have not encountered anything like that. And I have not yet heard of a credible case that involved demonic activity.
Well, we've never talked about my ex-husband.
Well, that's true. There's
there we go.
Vicky's ex-husband. But other than that, yes. I have not seen any credible stories, Brian.
You know, Brian, I have a question for you. What kinds of speculations do you encounter most in the UFO community?
It's interesting you'd say that. I listened to your guys' show from last week and how you covered the differences in certification in ghosts versus that in the ufological field, which they don't banter and argue and fight with each other. And it's kind of the same thing here, where there are some small groups of belief about certain things, but it's not based in fantasy or based in just speculation. There is a little bit of theories that go with this stuff, not just grasping at straws, but I don't really see that much as far as, you know, in UFOs, but versus that in ghosts. I mean, there is obviously things, crazy things that people believe that really have no basis for reality, but you'll get that anywhere. But
I think that's really interesting that there's such a division between, you know, in attitudes within the UFO community versus the, you know, other
ghosts.
I mean, the biggest thing with UFOs is conspiracy. You know, everything's a conspiracy, that there's a cover-up for this or a cover-up for that. But that's really a small segment. When you get into the researchers, the people who do the real work in the field, there's really not that much in the way of that kind of speculation, except for the people who are trying to sell books.
Yeah.
Like the lizard people and stuff?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point, too, you know, is the books and just the need to believe and all that. And I want to stress, if you're out there listening to this and you're an anomalous researcher, paranormal researcher, first stop being a ghost hunter. start really being an objective researcher, a scientist, if you will. Look for answers. Don't look to prove your question, your hypotheses right necessarily. You may have a hypothesis, fair enough, but you want to try to falsify it. That means you want to try to prove it wrong, because if you can't, then what you're left with has got some truth to it. So you don't want to go into any of this trying to prove a preconceived notion. You want to go into it with an open mind to find out what's going on, whatever that may be.
Right? Isn't it because most people, like all our experiences with spirits and other worlds, is so subjective that it never really repeats. And what we're looking for as, like, let's say as researchers, is things that repeat. Does that kind of narrow it down a little bit?
Brian, go ahead.
We can go in several different directions with this, but there's so much speculation with, when you're talking about tools and technology, or the attitude of, well, I'm doing science because I have an EMF detector. it's not science. I mean, Lloyd Auerbach said once, I can teach a monkey how to use an EMF detector. It doesn't make him a scientist.
Yeah.
So it's not what you're doing and what you're doing it with. It's how you're doing it and how you're going about it, the mentality behind it. Just like you said about trying to disprove it, you should try to disprove everything instead of supporting your own belief systems, because that's scientific bias, or experimenter bias, I should say. And it's really as against science as you can get.
Yeah.
I guess one of the questions that I had when I had read this email about, they're trying to release all the spirits from the cemetery, is why do they think they have to?
I know.
Like, doesn't anybody ask that question? Like, is it any of our business?
Well, let's go deeper than that. First of all, we look at the universe and everything has such an order to it, right? We look at this planet, and even though we live on a planet where everything eats everything else, there's still an ecology to it, or a system to it, and everything is balanced. And when things get out of balance, then we have problems. Well, are we to believe that people die and for some reason they're somehow stuck here? They're stuck in a grave or a cemetery of all places, and yet we have all these other cases where people have died, but they're not in a cemetery. They're the place they used to live. The place they loved, or something like that. So which one is it? Now, is it true that some of these spirits, stay earthbound for whatever reason? Well, now, yes, there appears to be some truth to that, but for compelling reasons. For example, unfinished business. We have a lot of examples where a spirit needed to get message through to loved ones, maybe about a will, maybe about hidden money, or hidden documents that were necessary, whatever it happened to be. And there's some pretty compelling stories or cases along those lines. So it would seem to argue that, yes, maybe they can remain. But, are people imprisoned? Well, they might be. I don't know. But where do we get that? Where do we pull that from? And the point I'm trying to make is be careful not to pull some of these things from that dark, smelly place.
What do you best recommend for people who come to you, Brian, and through Paranexus especially, who, ask these kinds of questions? Or are they asking the questions, or are they just trying to recruit for what they believe in?
Well, I think when you're referencing this specific thing here of a mass soul rescue, there are certain psychics that can sense this or feel this, and they feel that they have some sort of obligation to remove these spirits or to move these souls to another area. But psychics are just like ice cream. There's a million different flavors, and no two mm-hmm. psychics are really the same. They don't have that same connection to the environment. And most of us, I'm speaking for myself, I have really little, if any, psychic ability. So me joining in on this thing to help, I don't really know what good I would do, other than probably getting a headache from trying to concentrate. But
well, I think there's a sensibility that you bring to it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's just this individual person's perspective about what they feel is occurring. And, you know, obviously we here on this panel don't agree with that and feel that it's maybe not a waste of time, but giving that direction or giving that information as fact is detrimental.
It's codependent. It's trying to control something that's not your business to control. And, you know, why is it incumbent upon us, the living in the flesh, physical, to try to free those in the spirit? I mean, that, in my opinion, that's a step above. I mean, that's a different realm. That's, you know, it's where you go when you're done here. And, you know, are people imprisoned in that realm by their own belief systems? Well, there's also compelling evidence to suggest that, too. Just like people are imprisoned right now here in this world, they're imprisoned by their own belief systems. And they put them, they'll keep themselves in toxic relationships, in crappy situations. Why? Because of their belief systems. It's no different in the next chapter. But, you know, is it my job to go around to all the people that are in toxic relationships and try to slap them around and say, hey, wake up, you got to get out of this? Is that my job? No, it's not. And it's not my job to free all the spirits. Now, if you know, if I'm psychic, which I'm really not in the typical way, if a spirit comes to me and wants some assistance and asks me, sure, be happy to. But it's not our job to go codependently fixing the problems of the universes. And so and I don't want to keep harping on this one example because there's a zillion of them. Let's take orbs, for example. Somebody come up with the idea that these are spirits. Where that came from, I have no idea.
I can tell you.
Okay, go ahead.
Dr. Dave Oster.
Oh, yes, that's true. Dr. Dave. Okay, so he coined the term orbs, so he says.
Sure.
And, you know, he says they're spirits. And then there's some others. I mean, there's former Sanford doctors that are writing books and calling them, you know, sentient entities. And without the compelling basis. Now, I don't want to harp on orbs again, yet again. Well, or do I? Maybe I do. But the point is that if you're going to have a hypothesis, you've got to have some kind of a compelling basis. You want to believe in something, fine. I don't care. But at least be able to defend it to a reasonable extent. When we're talking the paranormal or metaphysical, we don't have concrete, hard and fast, objective, reproducible proof. But we can have rational, what I call rational proof, if it makes sense and it's compelling and there's no other hypotheses or other explanations at the moment to explain it, then you might have something that's a compelling idea, a compelling thing.
You know, Kim has said in the chat room, I feel too many people think of souls as one-dimensional. And I think that that's a really good point to mention because we are seeing life and multiple layers of life through one set of eyes, and it depends, you know, kind of what kind of mm-hmm. thinking that we have. So if we're perceiving, you know, the spiritual realms through, you know, a perspective of a human experience, then we could be falling a little flat. You know, I mean, I have encountered, Doug and I have talked about this a lot, I've had a lot of encounters to many different degrees with life that's not human. But it's, you know, there's a sensibility that we have. When people call me and say, I have a spirit in my house, I say, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do I do? I'd say, well, leave it alone. Is it a him or I think that's cool. I mean, I don't know why. Well, I'm afraid. I say, why? You know, unless it's throwing dishes around or, you know, and then, okay, then we got a little talking to do. And, well, what do you do, Vicky, when this happens? I say, leave my stuff alone. You know, don't bug my stuff. There's plenty of space here, but I live in the physical world. I'm here. This is my house. I don't mind visitors. Do you want to are you passing through? Are you, have you got your suitcases? Like, what's the deal? And yet there's other incidents. I rarely do this. I think a handful of times in my life because I don't like to do house cleaning of spirits. And because there's just too many possibilities that we've talked about before in previous shows. You know, some things are manifested by people's own minds or it's exaggerated, mm-hmm. you know. There's just too many variables that happen. And besides that, my thing, I've always wanted to teach people how to do it for themselves. Empower yourself and know who you are, and nothing can bug you. I mean, it's that simple. But it's our perspective that lends us into believing that things are a certain way when they may not be. So I like to keep my mind open to say, look, I may know a little something, but I got a way long way to go. So I don't like to hold on to, that's my point here, is I don't like to hold on to one particular belief. Or, I mean, it suits me today. I say, this theory works for me today. These are my experiences, but I could see it from a whole number of other ways too. So I just don't get it when people have nothing better to do than clean spirits out of cemeteries. I mean, honestly, I appreciate, again, you've said it before, the intent may be there, but I think it's just kind of playing with stuff that they have no idea what they're doing.
Be careful of your beliefs, too, in terms of the other things. I mean, we get a lot of religiously based researchers, you know, again, trying to bless and use the holy water and all that. You know, if the clients believe in all that stuff, well, then you manage those beliefs. You might use the cross, you might use the Bible, you might use holy water, but that's because you're managing their beliefs. It's not because it works. It's their belief.
Oh, there you go again. You burst my bubble.
I'm sorry.
I got stuff that works.
Well, it works because you intend it, deliberate
yes,
intent
of course, absolutely.
To work. And
moving
and,
energy with your mind. It's absolutely
yes,
possible.
And it's, they're basically belief aids is what they are. So be careful what you, if you're with an EMF meter and you get a bunch of EMF spikes, you can't be too quick to call that a spirit. What you've got is high EMFs. Where they came from, you may never know. It could be, you know, some appliance, somebody in the next house, something, you know, somebody turned on their, I don't know, some
radio,
you know, some big powered thing, you know. So be careful not to jump to conclusions, because if you jump to conclusions and you say, oh yeah, it was a spirit and this is why, and then later you find out that it was explainable through natural causes, then your credibility just went down the toilet. Brian, jump in.
And it's even worse when you're dealing with a client. If you're feeding, they already have a belief system of something is happening. That's why they called a ghost group in, or otherwise they would call somebody else. So for you to continue to feed their beliefs by you jumping to conclusions is going to make the client dig deeper into fear
mm-hmm.
and misunderstanding. You know, you should be there to be the rational one to find the logical conclusions about things. And they may not like to hear that initially, but I think every case I've ever had, there's always been that resistance initially, but over time when I can really convince them that there's no harm coming to them. And like Vicky had said before, they're in the physical world and they're in control. And once you empower them,
mm-hmm.
they get that control back and they can breathe easier. Their shoulders kind of drop and they feel more comfortable. And guess what? Things stop.
And that's the key to all of it, taking your power back. I've been saying that forever. You want to fix a haunting, take your power back. You want to fix a toxic relationship, take your power back. You want to fix an abduction, alien abduction, take your power back. That's the key to all of it, because your own self-belief, your own self-confidence, your own power dominates. It protects you. And I appreciate what you said too, Brian, and I'm trying to get, there's so many things you're touching on, everybody's touching on, and they keep passing by, but be careful when it comes to doing no harm. Be careful not to promote fear. If you were to tell a client, oh, this could be demonic, oh, don't go there. That's doing harm, because number one, demons don't exist. They might exist in somebody's mind, but that's not a reality. Could there be a mean spirit? I suppose, and you know, maybe, but they can't do you any harm. Spirits can't hurt you. And I keep hearing people say, well, they can, you know, scratch you and all that. I don't care. That my cat scratches me. Stop whining. They can't hurt you. They can't kill you. They cannot possess you. You know, if they could, man, there'd be people all around with demonic possessions going on, because, you know, these demons allegedly from the scriptures get their jollies on possessing people, but that's just not what we see. People are, in fact, the majority of people are, in fact, possessed, but just not by spirits. They're possessed by their mate, their spouse, their religion, their job, whatever, not spirits.
Well, possession, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Brian.
Possession can happen, and it's almost a matter of any kind of haunting or paranormal activity. There's emotion, mm-hmm. whether it's a haunting, it's imprinted. Mm-hmm. A person can pick up that negative energy, and it can affect them. So that's kind of sort of, you know, related to that. But mm-hmm. actually, I have a friend of mine who's a religious demonologist, David Considine, who's pretty well known. And I'll tell you what, I always figured that him and I would butt heads on things, but the more and more that we talk, I find out we have a lot more in common than we thought about how we approach our cases and our clients. We both end up doing the same thing about empowering them, about coming yep. to that conclusion of giving them their power. And his cases come from people who believe all that stuff, and so he connects with them on that level. But, you know, I could take his cases just the same.
Well, yeah.
It's coming down to the same exact thing that we're talking about here.
Oh, there's some people who can exhibit some pretty, you know, funky behaviors that sound like they're demonic and possessed. But, you know, I'm sorry, I just can't help but explain that away psychologically and as an aspect of the human makeup, the human mind, that
I think
can get despondent.
If I can give an explanation for it, there is obviously channeling. There's mm-hmm. lots of stuff to back up channeling, and channeling other entities through us. And I think very often there can be a collision of the psychological to that other energy, that other entity. And when it collides, it gets all messed up. and then people feel like they're being possessed because there's this struggle, an internal struggle. And again, from an outsider's perspective, you're looking at this and you're saying, wow, that's demonic. But that's just an internal collision. I do think that there are spirits that are like low in the evolutionary scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got their issues.
There are humans like that too.
And sure, and well, like attracts like, right? I mean, there's a frequency that attracts it, and if you have certain issues, then that's kind of the thing that you'll attract, especially if you're not feeling an empowerment, like I'm the boss of me, so to speak. So, you know, there's other explanations.
Wrap it up, Brian. Give us a send-off.
Send-off. Well,
not really, but, you know, I was trying to make you feel good.
Let me climb on my horse and ride to
any concluding thoughts, Brian?
Well, I think what we've learned tonight is a lot of what we're thinking and feeling is based on how we perceive the world. And if we perceive the world negatively, we're going to perceive it on other people as negative as well, and we'll kind of make ourselves look like fools.
Good. Well
good
put.
Good stuff.
And folks, just to sum it all up, do no harm, do right, be balanced, no fanaticism, don't judge other people, let people live their lives, don't violate their rights. If you're an anomalous researcher, be careful about what you sign your name to, because it can come back to bite you. Be careful about speculating without a good, compelling, solid basis for your beliefs. There are other ways, usually, of explaining this stuff. And if you've been doing it for any time, any length of time, you're going to realize that 95% or better of these cases can be explained psychologically, natural occurrences, hoaxes, anything and everything but paranormal. So be careful to latch on to that paranormal conclusion. Make sure you've really looked at everything. Next week we'll have another couple of topics for you. If you've got any topics you'd like to see discussed, please email us admin@ismh.org. That stands for the International Society of Metaphysical Humanism, admin@ismh.org. Visit us at metaphysicalhumanism.org. If you're interested in classes, metaphysicsinstitute.org or ICHSworld.org. Till next week, we appreciate your time. Listen, think, go, and live. Good night.
Good night.